It's Mental Health Month, and today's guest is one of our DBH psychiatrists. I'm excited to chat with him about his mental health journey and the incredible work he does for the department. Let's get started. We have the honor of having Dr. David R. Block joining us today. Dr. Block, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, especially during Mental Health Month. It's a privilege to be with you today.
So Dr. Block, tell our listeners what it is that you do for behavioral health.
Sure. So I play many roles. I do see patients in our Mariposa clinic in Ontario. That's 2 days a week. And then the rest of my time, it's a mix of administrative roles, primarily in the quality management department. I do chart reviews, but I also help manage some of our more complex individuals with a lot of not just mental health issues, but physical health issues as well, particularly those with complex eating disorders. I also help out with a number of other activities involving liaisoning with our managed care insurance partners for Medi-Cal.
So how much time would you say you spend actually treating or speaking with clients versus doing the quality management part?
Well, actually, face-to-face with patients is probably about 40% of my time. But a lot of what I do behind the scenes, I say, with the complex care, I feel like I know these folks very well, even though it's on paper and talking to maybe their care providers. So even when I'm doing my administrative work, for me, it feels like I'm still directly affecting the care of patients.
Yeah, I you definitely are. I think for me, when I joined behavioral health, I wasn't familiar with the system and all the work that we do and kind of making sure that the services that we provide are effective. You know, I just figured doctors see a patient and write up a diagnosis and give a prescription, and that's about it. But that's not what our doctors do, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. I mean, to work with the population we do as a psychiatrist, it's much, much more than just writing a prescription or making a diagnosis. And that's something that has always been my philosophy with working with our population, because I've worked in other public mental health systems. You really have to meet the person where they're at. And so sometimes that means when I'm meeting with somebody, it's not to check out their prescriptions or where they are with their physical health. It's, okay, how do you get your bike back that was stolen? That may be the focus of a session because that's where the patient is at right now. That's part of the beauty of working in DBH and the public mental health system. You never really know what is going to happen during an appointment.
Well, I have to say, I have family members who see psychiatrists, and the experience in, for me, at least in the private sector, has been not so good in comparison to the services that I see our psychiatrists provide. You know, obviously, I'm not getting direct services from our psychiatrists, but just in speaking with you and other psychiatrists, you know, who are part of DBH, I'm always like, wow, they really care. They really do so much more than what I ever experienced on the private sector. So I definitely appreciate your work and the work of all of our psychiatrists and our residents that we have, because it is definitely noticed. And I think it has an impact on our consumers.
Oh, I think absolutely. And I think our population deserves it. They deserve the five-star service. They need the five-star service. And then I also just wanted to add that it takes a village. So it's not just the wonderful 50 or 60 psychiatrist colleagues, but it's all of the folks that go behind those visits. Even those people that don't actually quote unquote touch the patient or have direct contact, all of those folks are really important to the end product, you know, which is, as you say, consumers or patients that are very satisfied and make it through to recovery.
Yeah. You know, and I tell people that when we do like new employee orientation, I'm like, you know, our patients or our consumers pretty much don't have a choice, really. I mean, they kind of do, but not really, because we are the public behavioral health system. So it's like I've been on the other side in terms of needing to get my services or get my things to keep me sustained through a government system, you know, and sometimes that was a really bad experience. And it was just like, well, I didn't have a choice. I didn't have the ability to go anywhere else. But so I always kind of keep that in mind. And so when our patients or when we see our people, I'm like, man, like, we're really good. Can I transfer into our service, our system of care? Because it's way better than the private sector for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very proud to do the work I do each and every day. Interestingly enough, today's my 3-year anniversary with the county, and I'm very, very happy to have been chosen to work for San Bernardino County. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, nice. Well, I'll tell Dr. Frosto to get the cake and ice cream ready. So, Dr. Block, I noticed on your signature really quick that you're an MD, but you're also an MMM. What is that?
Okay, so that's a Master of Medical Management degree that's only offered from a few universities in the country. It's more or less a business type degree, a management type degree, specifically for physicians. This is a degree that I earned from the University of Southern California a few years ago. And it was really because I saw a need personally in the work I was doing as to improve management and administrative skills as a physician. You go through medical school and you know college before that, and then residency, and it's very clinical. But when you actually get into practicing medicine, and in my case, psychiatry, you realize how much of your clinical work is impacted by non-clinical factors. And so to become more effective as a practicing psychiatrist, but also because some of my interests within medicine and mental health were moving away from strictly clinical to more of a systems look, I felt like I needed that extra training.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that when you were talking, I'm like, that's so cool. Again, I'm like, I don't want to go back to talking about how cool that is, but like, in all honesty, I wouldn't be saying it if it wasn't true. Like, I really have a deep level of respect for all of our psychiatrists, including you. So thank you for that. So Dr. Block, you mentioned earlier today, thank you for mentioning that May is Mental Health Month. So in brainstorming speakers for actually this podcast, Dr. Kelly asked that I reach out to you because she said that she had previously heard your testimony surrounding mental health. And she said that it was quite powerful. So are you able to share your story with our listeners?
Sure. I guess I should start with a little bit about why I do what I do and how I got drawn to this. You know, I had always wanted to be a doctor from a very young age, related to my grandmother being in a car accident and being in the intensive care unit when I was probably about 9 or 10 years old, and going to visit her and seeing all of these machines and tubes, and she was in a coma for a bit. And after several weeks, she made it out, and she lived several more years of a great life. And I thought, I want to do that. I want to be able to help people in that way. I'd always been very curious and loving how things work. So I knew going into college that that is what I wanted to do. I never expected to go into mental health. I took an intro to psych class and dropped out after a week in college because I just thought it was so theoretical and like, what is the application of this to real life? In medical school, I thought I was going to become a pediatrician. I was fortunate, and this is sort of a theme in my life, that I've had some really fantastic mentors along the way who have helped guide me. And one was a pediatric cancer doctor. And he was an older gentleman who is the classic embodiment of what you want a caring doctor to be. One of his most famous, in my opinion, was he would do surgeries on patients, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, who cannot accept blood donations, and no other physician would do their surgery. He would do it. That's how much respect he had. And he said, I'm going to do this surgery to save this child. Wow. And it's risky, but if that's where the family is at. So I learned a lot from him. I also learned that working with families who are dealing with children with cancer was not for me. It was too emotional. You get very connected. And pediatrics, for a number of reasons, became less and less of an interest for me, except in pediatrics when it came to the psychiatric issues. And when I did my psychiatry rotation in medical school, I was expecting to hate it. It was in the county medical center where I went to medical school, and it turned out it was the best, I don't know, 2 months of my entire medical school. I worked on an inpatient unit with primarily psychotic patients. And then because of my interest in pediatrics, I worked in a child psych unit. And both of those really spoke to me because you got to spend time with people. And that is something that I still value today, especially working at the county. We have the ability, it's really a privilege, to spend time, which most other healthcare workers do not. The amount of time we get, our therapists, our peer and family advocates, our psychiatrists, our nurses, it really is a privilege when you look at the whole healthcare system. And I think it's beyond privilege. I think it actually makes a huge difference in the outcomes and the recovery we see with our patients. I think I'm also drawn to this field because pretty much all generations of my family have had some type of mental illness. I've seen therapists and psychiatrists before myself. And so I learn a lot from that. And I think that to be really effective in this line of work, having that lived experience is really, really important. And I know that I take what I have learned and continue to learn in therapy myself into the work I do with my patients every day.
Well, I love that. Love that story. So speaking of your own mental illness, for me, I struggle with depression and it gets really bad sometimes. And I remember one time I was in the break room here at admin and I said something because there was a bunch of people, this was pre-COVID. And I said something along those lines like, oh, you know, my depression's acting up again. And this person in the room just gave me the ugliest look and was, it just like walked out of the room. And I was like, oh my goodness, we work for behavioral health, right? And there's still people with this stigma attached to it that I couldn't even say it as a you know, colleague or as a coworker. So have you shared that, you know, with your colleagues and coworkers, or maybe not at behavioral health, but in other instances, and has it impacted how people react to you?
Yeah, I mean, I have been open with many people. You know, just in 2021 has not been a great year for me personally. And so I've shared that because the way I look at it is you can't walk the walk and talk the talk, you know, if you're not being honest with yourself. And part of that, I think, is sharing it with family. And so my concept of family is not just who I'm related to by blood. It's also those people that I work with day in and day out, because I think the statistic is you spend as much time in your life sleeping, which is like a third of your life, as you do at work. So those people become your family. And just like sleep, they sustain you and they are necessary for propping you up when you need some help. And so for me, it's been a positive experience because when you let other people know, when you make that connection, you're able to receive back hopefully what you need. And I think that's a big part of resilience is having the courage to be open and ask for that connection, because that's making yourself vulnerable. You may not always get what you ask for or what you need, but if you do and if you get it, it sustains you and it's part of resiliency, in my opinion.
So in your professional opinion, do you end up hating your coworkers as much as you hate your family?
I will, no comment.
I heard Dr. Kelly say one time, like, I came to work just so I could get away from my kids, and I could, and that resonated with me. Like, yeah, I get that, man. Yeah.
I believe relationships, at least the healthy ones, are bidirectional, which means and again, for me, those relationships are not dyads. It's not even a triangle. It's some crazy geometric figure, I guess. And so, sometimes you need to get less of one relationship and either temporarily or not so temporarily focus your energies on other relationships that will help sustain you more. And that's also another part of resilience, I think, which is balance. You have to be able to balance so many things in your life, because very few things are, okay, I need either this or this. It's black or white. It's good or bad.
Right.
And finding that balance, which doesn't have to be 50-50, is really important as well.
Thank you so much, Dr. Block, for sharing with us your testimony and what led you to enter the field of medicine and for your work here at DBH. I think in closing, the last thing I wanted to ask you was, I think I mentioned a little bit earlier that my experience with behavioral health prior to coming here was very minimal. I was very naive to everything that we did. But one thing that kind of struck me, and maybe it's because I have depression and I have family members with mental illness, is that I found kind of in publications or in reviewing collateral material, people would write the term, this person suffers from mental illness. And I was always like, I don't like that word, suffers from mental illness. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I think sometimes with it, especially my family, I don't see it so much as a curse, right? I see also it being something that makes the person that I love creative, makes that person spontaneous, makes them love other people more. So what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So kind of two or three thoughts on that. First, I think that our health is part of our identity. And so our mental health becomes part of our identity, and how much of that it becomes is really up to the individual and how you view that part of your identity, your mental health or your mental illness is really individual. Some people would rather not talk about it at all or not identify with it. And for other people, it becomes a symbol for them or a huge part of their identity. Unfortunately, as you were mentioning, Aymara, sometimes society can enforce a certain identity or a certain judgment based on how people identify. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an ongoing battle, frankly, for persons dealing with mental illness. So I consider myself part of the army in fighting that battle. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the suffering part, I think people do suffer with any kind of illness, whether it be physical or mental. And for me, suffering doesn't have to equal pain, nor does it have to necessarily be a negative. I think there is a lot of suffering in life in general, yes, sadly. There's loss, there's pain, physical, mental, or otherwise. And I think for me, what's important is to find meaning and to use that suffering as sort of like a fertilizer to help you grow, so that when you face the next challenge or the next time in your life when you're suffering or you could suffer, you're better able to manage that. So for me, suffering is something that I accept in life, and it's something that I think if a person can tolerate it and sort of turn it into something that helps them grow, then it really becomes more of a positive than a negative in a very paradoxical way.
Dr. David Block, thank you so much for joining us today on Resilient and Real.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, and take care and be well, everyone.
Okay.
Michelle Dusick, MHSA Administrative Manager, shares with us how she practices self-care in this week's Self-Care Corner.
I try to exercise a little bit on a daily basis, even if it's just a short walk, just making sure that somehow I'm moving. It's really easy, I think, when we're, you know, on a computer to just be sedentary all day long. And so I just make sure that I have some sort of effort to get up and move. And even if it's a short walk, I make sure I do something every single day. A big part of, I think, practicing self-care for me is trying to eat right. I try to like avoid processed foods and sugar and fast food and all that kind of stuff. And that really makes a huge difference, I think, in your energy level and how you can get through your day. I do a lot of meal prep. One of the things I really try to do is maintain a balance between like my personal and my professional life. Really like to make time to make sure that I'm doing the things that I really like to do, the things that make me happy. You can't be there for other people in the way that they need you to be there for them if you're not okay.
May is not over yet, and we still have some exciting virtual events coming up, including the 17th annual Evening with the Stars, featuring Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter Michelle Williams on Friday, May 28th. Plus, if you miss the Directing Change Award ceremony, you can still watch it on our Facebook and YouTube page. To learn more about all the ways that you can celebrate Mental Health Month, visit celebratemhm.com. Until next time, live life resilient and real.